what is the standard? You know, and I something that I've really learned the last year and a half here with Coach Venables is best is the standard. And it's not to be the best per se, but it's to be your best. And it's a daily best, you know, and it's waking up every day and finding joy in that process.
Welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. I'm your host, Bailey Miles. The Building Excellence Podcast is all about sharing inspiring stories from some of the most successful athletes, coaches, business minds, and thought leaders to help you build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. We hope this show provides you with tremendous value. And if you find the show impactful, please share with a friend and on social media, as well as subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. Thanks. Now let's get to the show and start building excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. Matt Wells is currently a football coach at the University of Oklahoma. He was formerly the head coach at Texas Tech University and Utah State University. Coach Wells spent 3 years at Texas Tech and 6 years at Utah State as the head coach. After his time at Utah State, he closed his tenure as the second winningest coach in program history, leading them to five different bowl games in those 6 seasons. Before becoming the head coach at Utah State, he had stops at New Mexico, Louisville, Tulsa, and Navy. On the show, Coach Wells does a deep dive on what it means to create, establish, and build a sustainable culture. Some of the keys that he elaborates on are building authentic relationships, developing trust, toughness, communicating vision, hard work, having best as a standard, and much more. He also shares his story of growing up, playing football at Utah State, making tough decisions, learning from failure, faith, family, being present, and finding joy in the process of it all. This is a great conversation with an even better man and coach. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. Today I have a special guest, Coach Matt Wells. Coach Wells, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Bailey. Appreciate you.
Yeah, well, if you wouldn't mind kind of give our listeners some background and context to you and what life was like growing up for you.
Yeah, I grew up in Sallisaw, Oklahoma, as you know, a small town and two parents. Very, very fortunate that two parents in my life and were very invested in I really believe, raised me the right way and my brother and two sisters. You know, and that I think the way I was raised was, you know, in church with discipline and values. And, you know, I was, I think, a product of a small town with a lot of families that, you know, poured into each of us. Our teachers, high school coaches certainly inspired me and I think molded me in many ways. And my three sports that I played there, you know, growing up, in that town. And it's something that I value. I'm thankful for. And I just think created a lot of accountability and discipline at a young age, but also I had many families and many people that poured into me. And I'm so thankful for that.
And you touched on families and also sports. You're saying you played three different sports. Were you doing anything outside of sports that you look back on that shaped you as well? Or was it just
I'm
totally
telling
focused
you,
on sports?
I didn't have much time. It was football, basketball, baseball in the summer. And I told this story to our OU coaches clinic the other night. And, you know, in spring and in summer, I worked for our offensive line coach. He had a landscaping, lawn mowing business. And, man, I did that. If I wasn't doing that, I was, you know, playing summer league baseball to either camps or lifting weights or throwing the football. And it was an all day deal. I mean, you know, I did that. That was my job, you know, push mower. Think I graduated to the weed eater. Definitely did not ever get to ride. That was Coach Rogers. Maybe he didn't let any of us, and got a 50-cent raise every summer. Pretty proud of that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's good to know, you know, some of the things that also you were doing outside of sports. And you talked a little bit about your parents and discipline. What are some other values as you look back now that you really appreciate from them raising you from that perspective?
Just learning, you know, learning hard work, learning to, you know, manage your time during the day, but working hard, putting the preparation in, whether it was sports and, you know, your conditioning, your lifting, for me as a quarterback, throwing, baseball, hitting in the cage, just work and learning how to work all day, I think is something that I think that was maybe the biggest, if not, you know, when you look at values or the way you were raised outside of church or anything like that, I think that that was probably instilled in me at a pretty high level.
Was that something you were naturally a kind of person that was going to work hard, or was it just over time that when you're doing something, that's what you were going to be doing regardless?
Yeah, I think it may have been a mix. And if it wasn't so much wanted to, I think I had to. And yeah. So I think you learn, you know, you learn to like the grind and working in the dark, so to speak. But I think, you know, you learn, you know, separation's in the preparation, man. And I learned that at a young age. And you want to try to separate yourself from your peers or from somebody else, you had to prepare and you had to put the work in. And it wasn't just talent driven, but it was, you know, you had to sweat and you had to work hard. And I think that those were all instilled, and not just by my parents, but high school coaches, teammates. You know, I played with a lot of good dudes in high school and guys that would work their butt off. They're successful today. And so I think that was just kind of how we were all wired a little bit back then.
Sure. And it's also, you touched on your teammates. I'm sure when you're talking about them being wired the same way, being around people like that every single day, whether it's playing football, basketball, or baseball, having people around you with the same mentality, whether you probably realize it or not, elevates you as well. And so yeah, having teammates like that is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, and I think you feed off each other too. You inspire each other. You feed off each other. You're there to pick each other up in the bad days. And I think that's all about being a good teammate.
Absolutely. So when did it become apparent maybe that you wanted to play at the next level beyond high school? And what did that look like from, talked about preparation and hard work. What were you doing trying to get to that next level?
Yeah, probably junior high, early parts of high school. You know, my goal was to be the next All-State quarterback at Salisaw. And there were certainly a bunch before me, and I know some after, but that was a big goal. And to play college was a goal of mine. And so that was something that I think I set out pretty early in high school, and it may have been even as early as junior high.
So what were some of the things you talked about coaches as well? What were they doing to kind of help you, not just in your football preparation, but maybe as a quarterback in your mental preparation and some of the things that you guys were trying to do at a young age that helped you as you got to the next level in college as well?
Yeah, I think just, you know, setting a standard and holding you accountable and teaching you, inspiring you. And, you know, my high school coaches in Salisaw were awesome. I look back on it, all three sports, football, basketball, baseball. I played for some Oklahoma High School Hall of Famers. And those guys inspired me. They were a big part of my life, as well as many of my teammates' lives growing up. And I look back on with really good memories, really good stories, maybe some not so good, but, you know, whether it was the key to the back gym or the key to the weight room, which probably not given out anymore these days, to mowing lawns with coach, as I talked to you about earlier. But those guys were a big part of me growing up.
Mm-hmm. And did you get to play with your brother in high school?
No, he was too young.
Too young.
Yeah, he was 5 years younger. So, yeah.
Okay. Didn't get to do that, but
yeah.
So you wound up going to Utah State. How did that come about? Because, you know, being in Salisaw, Oklahoma, going to Logan, Utah, that's a little bit of a change. How did
Yeah,
Utah
long
State,
ways away.
Yeah. How did that come on the picture?
Yeah. So Charlie Weatherby, the head coach that I played for my first 3 years at Utah State, when I was a junior and senior in high school, he was the quarterback coach at Arkansas and was recruiting me to go there, and then got the job. My senior year, started recruiting me there. Long story short, some other schools in the area didn't work out. I'll just leave it at that. And I got a chance to go play for him and Jim Zorn at Utah State. And so that's how I got out there.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like? It's always interesting to talk to people when they first go from high school into college. It's always an adjustment, no matter for anybody. When you get into sports, it's a little bit different because that is, you know, it's in a sense, it's a job because you're getting out there and it's a whole different ball game. What was that adjustment like for you? Or was it an adjustment at all?
Yeah, certainly was. I think, you know, for me, very vividly and real for me early was just, you know, throwing to Division I wide receivers from a speed aspect, you know, and learning the speed of the game, and the speed of the game going from high school to college is so much faster You know, the D linemen in college are as fast as the high school linebackers. The linebackers in college are as fast as the high school DBs. And then, you know, correlation there in terms of the speed. But I think that was probably the biggest thing from a football standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And as you got there, what were some of the things that you were learning, maybe from the practice perspective, but also from the mental component? Was that a difference from a mental perspective and preparation?
Yeah, but I don't think it was anything overwhelming. I mean, I think again, you spend time and you invest in terms of learning the playbook and learning what to do. That you know, I think it's again, it's just like going from high school to college and school. You know, it's a little harder, but you put time in and you put effort in, you're going to learn it.
Mm-hmm. And so when you got to Utah State, did you have any idea that you wanted to coach at the time, or were you just focused on playing?
Yeah, no, playing and just enjoying college life and playing ball. And it probably wasn't until, you know, like my last year, I think once I figured out I probably wasn't going to be good enough to play in the NFL, that I was going to give this coaching a try and try it out and become a GA, which I did, and see if that works out and see how the first few years go. But it wasn't until the end of my career that I think I started leaning towards coaching.
Yeah, and talk a little bit about that, because you had a great career playing at Utah State and then you decided to get into coaching. How did you wind up in the GA role, and what did that look like from just stepping into the coaching perspective?
Well, more, you know, and not to knock it or anything, but I really didn't know what else to do.
Okay.
And I don't know if I really wanted to get a real job. And I said, I'm going to, you know, I enjoy Saturdays. I enjoy the locker room. I enjoy teammates and the game and what it had given me up until that point. And, you know, I had a few opportunities to coach right out of college. And one was a GA job at Rice with Coach Hatfield. One was at Boise State with then the head coach was Houston Nutt. And it'd go to the Naval Academy with Charlie Weatherby and a few of the other coaches that had coached me in college. And I chose that route. And really, I just gave myself 5 years to become a full-time coach. And so for the first 4 years, I was the JV head coach and coached the fullbacks with Kenny Niumatalolo, who just finished there at the Naval Academy. But he was the offensive coordinator at that time. Mm-hmm. One of the youngest in the country, and he allowed me to coach the fullbacks with him. Yeah. Those were great times. And then my fifth year became the receivers coach, and then we got fired. The head coach got fired, and we were all looking for a job. And so I had a pregnant wife. Jen was pregnant with Jaden at that time. And so, again, 28 years old, pregnant wife, 30 days left on a contract, not knowing your insurance and all that. And I think that was the welcome to the real world moment for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the Naval Academy, it's just a little bit different, you know, from most universities, because there's a whole different aspect to the Naval Academy. We've had some guys on that have played different sports there, baseball and whatnot. And so it's this different, a little bit different perspective. Was it different for you as a coach when you're looking for different types of guys to recruit to come in?
Sure.
From the military perspective, and then yeah, being able to kind of have a little bit of balance between football and then also what they're doing every day on the day to day.
Yeah, I think we recruited a mix. You recruited some that were legacy kids that had that in their family that have always wanted to go to an academy. And then certainly you were trying, you were recruiting football players that may be their only Division I offer, and the chance to come play in the Army-Navy game or the Navy-Notre Dame game were big for them. And so I think you had a mix of types of players that you were recruiting, but certainly the military and the commitment and that aspect after post graduation has certainly played a big role as well. Huge role.
Absolutely. What are some things that you learned in that first coaching job? You know, as you look back from leadership, from how to, you know, work with players, because it's a little bit different when you're playing and now you're the coach, so it's a little bit different perspective. But as you look back at some of the guys that you're around on the coaching staff, what do you take away and what do you think really stood out to you?
The biggest probably impression that was made on me those first few years is just from some of the guys that I coached with that were young coaches that were Naval Academy grads. as well as maybe even some of the guys that I was coaching, because I wasn't that much older than them. And you know, your guys that you're talking about, guys that are, you know, Navy SEALs, several of them, captains in the Navy, that went Navy Air and became pilots and fighter pilots, and many of them had several tours. You know, we lost a couple of those players over the years, and so I just think them, watching them, learning from them, leadership, their work ethic, things that have been instilled in them through the Naval Academy, that was probably as big of an impression on me as much as anything in coaching, just because of the similarities in age.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting. I've never really heard that perspective of, maybe some guys learning from their players that they're around, because you can take away things from everybody, whether they're a coach, a trainer, player, whatever. We're always constantly trying to learn and grow from other people, and there's something that we can always take away. So I think that's a really profound and good example of just being open to learning and constantly growing.
Right.
So I think that's a great perspective. But you talked about being 28 years old, having your first kid on the, was it your first kid on the way? Is that correct? Yeah. And then having to deal with maybe, getting let go. What was your mindset, and then how did you land at the next opportunity?
Now, I can't give you anything real prophetic on the mindset except help, you know, where am I going next?
Figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah, I ended up getting on at Tulsa 3 months later. And obviously that's being close to a hometown, which was good, and in Oklahoma, and was recruiting Oklahoma, and you know, I had a lot of connections there with high schools and coaches there. But had a chance to, you know, spend 5 years at the University of Tulsa. Both girls were born there at St. Francis, and so good memories there, good times there. Coached some great players at the University of Tulsa. We went to 3 bowl games. And won the league 1 year, and so that was a really good time, and for me and for my family, young family at that time, but something that I look back with very fond memories of as I look back on my coaching career so far.
Yeah, and how important were relationships and building relationships throughout your whole experience? Because as a player, you're playing with your teammates, you're growing with them. As a coach, you're recruiting, you're working with other coaches. How important has the relationship component been? Because, when maybe you're let go, you're looking for a new job, those friendships that you develop maybe through recruiting, through coaching, how important is that? And, what do you think you go about building authentic, true relationships? How do you do that?
Yeah, I think it's just being real and being who you are, and the friendships that you do make in this profession. But I think it transcends into most businesses, and it is relational. And hopefully you're you know, from a you know, a personal perspective, it's more relational than transactional. And that's what you want as a head coach for your program, and the opportunities that I've had, you try to create that in recruiting, that things are relational. And when the difference to me is just time. It's time, it's sincerity. When you pour into other people as a friend or as a peer, from a coach to a recruit or a coach to a player, that builds trust, that deepens relationships, and those things stand the test of time.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting you touched on time, because especially like right now in today's day and age, it's really easy to want things quickly and not be
Yeah.
patient and not have the long-term perspective. But in relationships, good relationships take time. It's not like this overnight quick fix. And so it takes time to get to know someone, to actually care about someone, to learn about them, and then go through challenges with them. And so I think that's important. How would you go about maybe helping your teammates or your coaches or people maybe have a different perspective on time and being patient and developing relationships?
Oh, I just think you let things happen naturally, and you don't force it to be faster. I think everything in our society these days is now. It's now, and it's fast. It's microwave. You want it right now. But sometimes relationships do take time. I mean, certainly, I mean, it took like 2 years for my wife to say yes to go out on a date with me. So I certainly learned patience, you know, from that part of a relationship a long time ago. But you know, I think that it's just about just be natural and be who you are, and let it happen instinctively, but pour time into people and be where your feet are. Be present in the moment, be where your feet are. And when you're having a genuine conversation with people, it's real. You remember people's name and things are personal. And I think as you do that, whether it's peer to peer, it's in a business, it's in my business, which is football or profession. It's in recruiting. I think people see you as real and genuine. And I think that builds trust. And more than anything, trust. And when you have earned respect, you have gained that. I think now all of a sudden you have a leadership platform, whether you're a player or a coach or you're in any business.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Is it something that comes natural for you to be present?
I would hope so. I would
Yeah.
think so. And I think there's certainly times that I've failed to do that because it's now. And there's especially, in college football, it's what have you done for me lately? And oftentimes we get that out of whack. And I think there's times where I have failed and been short or have had something, what's next on my mind instead of being present in that moment with the conversation or a meeting or whatever it is. But yeah, I think I certainly have failed. I don't think that's real easy to do all the time
Yeah,
when
it's
you're a
not.
what's next guy or
Absolutely.
person.
Yeah, well, I would say from a quarterback, being a quarterback and being an athlete in high school, in sports, achievement's really important. Like being able to achieve and set goals and achieve them is really important, as is in business. But being able to be present instead of thinking about the next thing, just thinking about the thing that's in front of us and then accomplishing that and doing it well, doing it with excellence, and then moving forward to the next thing that is towards the big picture goal. But just
Right.
being present is, I know it's tough for me, and I know you've touched on that too, but it's a challenge for all of us, especially in the environment that we live in sometimes. But having the intentionality to be focused and be present and be where your feet are, like you said, is really key. And that's something that I'm trying to work on as well. But I think it's a powerful statement. And if you can intentionally do things each day to do that in your life, it makes a
Right.
big difference. So going back a little bit into your story, you got to TU, you guys had tremendous success at University of Tulsa. I think you wound up, did you go to the University of New Mexico next? Is that correct?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. What did that look like jumping to New Mexico? And what did you learn maybe in your time in New Mexico?
Yeah, probably more than anything, working for Rocky Long, who is a veteran, tremendous coach, was, the thing I look at New Mexico, what I learned was toughness, how it looks, what it looks like in a program, off season, in season, practice schedule. And I know that's not what this podcast is all about, but if I'm being real
Nope.
with you, it's toughness. It's a toughness factor. And anybody that's ever known Rocky or been around him know that that's, showing true grit. I think he's the poster child for that. And that's something that I got to see on an everyday basis for a couple years there with him.
Yeah, and how would you define toughness? Because sometimes it's talked about and sometimes it's not always defined, but in your opinion, what is like toughness? You touch on grit, which I think is probably a big key in that,
Yeah,
but
it's just doing hard things consistently, getting up, winning the day, going to work, going to the complex, going to work out when you don't feel like it. A lot of times you don't feel like it. And that's having mental toughness more than anything. And it's a discipline and having the personal accountability and selflessness to think about the good of the team over yourself or your feelings, because there's oftentimes in life when we don't feel like it, but you do it anyway, because you're tough and you're mentally tough. And I think, I think that that's a lot, it's how I was raised. That was the football program I grew up in. And so, that's how I would define it. That's how I would look at it. That's how I would also try to explain it.
Yeah, well, I think it's a great definition of toughness because sometimes, a lot of times, people say being tough, but being able to articulate and do those things every day to have grit, but also to do the things you don't want to do. I'm preaching myself right now too, but it's doing those things every single day, whether it's waking up, going to the gym, making those 20 extra calls or putting in the extra reps whenever you're doing whatever you're doing. I think that's
Right.
really important. So yeah, being able to learn toughness at University of New Mexico was great. And then I think you wound up going back to Louisville. Is Coach Kragthorpe at Louisville at the time?
I did, yeah.
And what was that like being at Louisville? And maybe actually dive into this perspective of you're at TU with Coach Kragthorpe and then you're at Louisville. Was the culture the same, or how did you guys go about trying to maybe adjust the culture or change things up? Or do you try to keep it the same?
Well, real talk. I didn't go with Coach Craig Thorpe right out of the gate. That's what I
Sure.
went to New Mexico. So when I got there to Louisville, it was year three. And that was Coach's tenure there was 3 years. So I was there his last year. We didn't get it done. So that was a really short stay for me, like 11 months. But the things that I learned there, in a little bit more of a coordinator role, passing game coordinator, and coaching the quarterbacks, and being with Steve, who is extremely sharp and a mentor of mine and a tremendous friend, being with him on an everyday basis, coaching the quarterbacks and being around that and putting the passing game together from a football standpoint was big for me.
You talked about your growth, but also you talked about Steve being a mentor to you. Obviously, you talked about him being sharp, but what were some of the things that he did specifically that you look back on and you really appreciate as a coach, but maybe also as a friend or mentor, maybe off the field too?
Yeah, just the time that he spent with me and poured into me as a young coach there at TU. He gave me responsibilities with with boundaries. I could say that had his fingerprints on them, but yet he didn't tell me how to get it done. For instance, he told me to cut the grass, but he didn't tell me what direction I had to go. Do I checkerboard it? Do I go in a square all the way around? Do I go over and back? Whatever it is. But I think you put your spin on it, and whether that was in recruiting for me as the recruiting coordinator under him, or coaching the tight ends, or on kickoff return, or the things that I had responsibilities in, I think just that, and I got to see that. I think I took that as when later when I became a head coach and trying not to micromanage everything under your leadership, and give guys parameters and give guys jobs, and then let them go to work, and then inspire them to be great in doing that. I thought he did a tremendous job of that.
Absolutely. Giving your guys the freedom to be able to, have ownership in what they're doing, but at the same
Yeah.
time be in under the big umbrella of what you're trying to accomplish as a whole, I think is really important. So you go back to New Mexico, I think, right after that, and then you wind up at Utah State. Is that correct? What was
Yeah.
it like to go back to where you played college football at?
Yeah,
And
awesome. Yeah, really good. And that's, I don't, we always say I dreamed about this. I don't know if you really have the dreams. Everybody's lying, I think, when they say that. But I mean, I would say it is a dream or something that was really cool for me to go back, because that's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to get back and coach quarterbacks and call plays at my alma mater. And for me to be able to do that and to be there at a time where we were turning the program around was important to me, because I didn't want to go back to coach at Utah State and us not be very good, just to be real blunt with you.
Sure.
Because all my teammates, I didn't want them saying, "Yeah, y'all suck, Wells," and everything. And so we did. I was determined that, if I was going to be a part as an assistant, that I wanted to have a good plan. And I thought we had a great plan. And we won seven the first year, or the first year that I was there, Coach Anderson's third year. And then the next year we won 11. So we had good players, and I thought we had a really good plan. And those 8 years, and then stayed there and spent 8 total years there, was a highlight of my career. Certainly, you ask my kids, they'll probably say they're from Logan, Utah, although all three of them were not born in Utah, but that was in their formidable years and growing up. And the people of Logan and Cache Valley are unbelievable. They're awesome and very supportive and great, great people, best neighbors we've ever had, and all of that. So it was a great time. And you were doing it at your alma mater. And it was important to me that locker room and the way that we played was very indicative of Utah State and being blue collar and being the things that we wanted in that team, because that's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to make my teammates proud when they look back and watched us play, and because you knew you had your stamp on it. And this was, once I became head coach and was fortunate enough to have that position, very humbling and very grateful, but also it was very inspiring for me to make sure that we played the right way and we represented the right way.
Well, I want to touch on that too, because you talked about getting to Utah State, and it wasn't like you guys were winning, you know, 10 games every year before you got there. You had to build something. You had to, you know, reestablish what you're talking about, culture, hard work, toughness, a blue collar mentality. And then you guys had done that and you got the head coaching job. What was it like for you as a young coach to come in and be a head coach from being an assistant coach? I mean, was that something you already prepared for? Were you ready for it? Or was it something where?
No. No, and anybody says they're ready for that's crazy.
Okay.
No, this is a profession, Bailey, that I think you get trained as you go throughout your young coaching career as an assistant. You get trained to call plays, whether it's offense or it's defense or a special teams coordinator or whatever. Nobody ever gets trained to be a head coach.
Yeah.
Unless you're a coordinator at the same place under the same head coach, and he entrusts a lot of things. And there's certainly, I'm sure, situations like that out there for some guys where they really have been trained in some things and some duties that are what a head coach does as a coordinator. It was never like that for me. And it also happened very quick. But no, you're not. And there were times and moments that first week and that first year, you're like, this is really what the head coach has to do? Are you kidding me? And there's times where I was like, can I just go be the offensive coordinator again?
Sure.
Yeah. You know, can I go put the clicker in my hand? And but you learn. And so you learn that to find joy in that. And it's a different role for you. And then you're inspired to be great at it or to be the best at it. And you're competing with 11 other coaches in the Mountain West Conference. And so whether it's recruiting, it's off season, it's playing. And so now your competitive juices come out and you just figure it out. And you oftentimes figuring it out is by messing it up and saying, all right, well, we got to figure out another way. And so, man, I've messed so many things up, you know, especially as a young coach, that oftentimes now coaches ask me, how do you know that? And it's like, 'cause I screwed it up and I learned how to fix it. And when you learn how to fix things, you know, I think you grow, and you certainly also have the inspiration to not ever screw it up again or get back to that same spot. But, you know, more than anything, it's just culture. It's trying to build the culture and sustain the culture and then rebuild the culture. And I don't think, you know, that culture always goes from year to year. I think you have to reset it and rebuild it and strip it down to the studs and rebuild it back up. And more than anything, culture is not anything that you proclaim, or it's not some slogan or something on a t-shirt or on a wall, but it's things that you practice and you promote. And it's also things that you allow. You know, what's the standard that you end up allowing? And how far are you going to go to allow something insidious behavior or whatever it is? And so it's not just the head coach, it's the assistant coaches, and it's the players, the leaders. What is the standard, you know? And it's something that I've really learned the last year and a half here with Coach Venables is best is the standard. And it's not to be the best per se, but it's to be your best. And it's a daily best, you know, and it's waking up every day and finding joy in that process. And it's finding joy in the doing and in the work and in you're doing it in the dark. Oftentimes, but every individual doing that and the collectiveness of it creates the culture. And that's what you're always trying to build and promote in a program. So I think that all those things were things that I love doing. But I think it's things that you build your program on.
Yeah. Well, touch on what were some of the biggest challenges as you first stepped into a head coaching role that were evident to you, and maybe trying to sustain a culture that you're establishing and building, or
correct. And yeah. And I stepped into one that had been already created. And, the good thing for me is that I was an assistant for 2 years in that same culture. And so in some ways I helped to create that. Wasn't the head coach, didn't try to be the head coach, but was a part of. And so you knew the ins and outs, whether it was a recruiting plan, it was the mission of a program, it was weight room, it was off-season expectations, anything like that. I already had a pretty good idea because I was already in the program. But I think the challenge is now, as you became a young head coach and a new head coach for the first time, we're not only sustaining them, but again, like I said, recreating them, but doing it my own way and not being the former head coach and not being, you know, trying to be like him or anything like that, not from a negative standpoint, but from a positive standpoint too.
Sure.
And I think, you know, just being very comfortable in your own skin and who you were. And so for me, all of that, as well as learning how to be a head coach, as well as learning how to, you know, hire staff, create accountability groups and the discipline in your program. And so all of those are all, man, it can be overwhelming because it's all coming at one time, you know? And so, plus we had a good team and we had good players. And so I didn't want to screw it up either.
Yeah. And you're a dad too. And husband.
Yeah, no kidding.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting you touched on all those things, because when we talk about culture, you're talking about sustained success for periods of time. It's how do you go in and establish that and then consistently bring in the right guys that build around those values. I think you touched on the word values earlier. How important were establishing values and bringing people in that had similar values to go about sustaining culture with your coaches, with your staff, with the people and the academic affairs? I mean, everyone is a part of it, because everyone has a hand in making sure that you guys fit the standard of the success goal that you guys are after.
Yeah. I think it's one of the more important things, not the most, because I think that usually has to do with your players, the most important thing. But it is one of the more important things that you do is hiring, and hiring those assistants that are going to carry out the mission. And that's including the weight room and the strength coach, who is around them really more than us in college football. Mm-hmm. It was your academic staff, and just making sure everybody's on the same page. So hiring guys that either you've been with, you know, you already know what you're getting, but you're never going to be able to hire all of them, and you're not hiring all your friends. And I certainly didn't do that either. But you are hiring guys that are going to be loyal to you and loyal to that culture and that brand, as well as, you know, like-minded coaches. And so, yeah, that's certainly a piece of the puzzle, and it happens really quick and really fast right at the beginning. And then for me, being at Utah State in a group of five, you know, hiring, I think that was one of the better things, very bluntly, but, you know, very candidly, that I did, and ended up losing them to Power Five jobs and guys getting raises that were 2.5 to 3 times their salary. And, you know, you're happy for them and their families, but then having to rehire and reestablish that and bring those position groups back together. And so that's certainly a challenge.
Absolutely. You're bringing in new players each year. You're bringing in staff sometimes, because you want to bring in the best staff you can, which are eventually obviously going to maybe have some opportunities to make a little bit more money. And so I think it's really fascinating, because as a head coach, you got so many responsibilities. You're bringing in so many people that maybe people don't see in the light. Like, they just look at you down the field and think that you're doing just this, when you have a lot more that's going on behind the scenes that you have to do on a daily basis. And finding the right people is really key. And so you talked on being able to find a lot of really good people. You also touched on kind of communication. How important is communication, and how do you go about communicating a compelling vision to where you're going each day? Or is it not as important maybe as people might think?
No, I think it's extremely important. You're always casting a vision. If you're the leader and you're the head coach, you're always casting a vision through words, through text, through phone calls, through one-on-one conversations, through team meetings, through visual cues. But it's got to be carried out by your assistants and your leaders on your team. But people have to feel it. They can't just hear it. They have to feel you. And so to feel you, you got to be, again, present in the moment. You got to be with them. And again, going back to what I said earlier, it's about the time. It's about earning trust, earning respect, and earning that relationship, and that relationship being developed. And the more that there's in that regard or in that realm, the easier it is for them to buy into a vision. and to not give up on a vision when at first you don't succeed. So I think there's always deep intrinsic feelings that go into, oh, he bought into the vision. Well, no, he bought into the person first, in my opinion, and then the vision is relayed later.
Absolutely. And it's trust. I think you mentioned trust earlier. It's being able to develop trust with your people because you touched on it. It's about the players. You bring in the
Right.
players that are attracted to you. They want to play for you because you're authentic and true to who you are. And that stems down towards everything else. So I think that's a really powerful point of building a culture and bringing in the right people. And you guys had great success at Utah State. So you had a lot of opportunities to go and coach, and you wound up going to Texas Tech. What was that like, maybe, to make a decision to go coach at Texas Tech, because you had been around such a great group and you had a really good group coming back too? So how do you maybe think about making decisions and processing things? Because as an offensive coordinator, you're making decisions quick, you got the plan in place, but you're also making
Right.
decisions as a head coach. Now you're having to make other decisions, and then now you're also doing things for your family too, and moving around the country. So there's
Right.
lots of challenges in that, but it constantly revolves around decision making and trying to
You
make
know.
the best decision possible. And you had a lot of great opportunities. So what did that look like, maybe making the decision to go to Tech? And then what was it like being at Tech?
Right. Yeah, that's a these are long answers to those two questions, and they're really good questions. You know, I think first thing when you talk about what went into the decision to go to Tech, you know, I think you got to have some perspective on the decision. You know, in the 8 years that I was at Utah State, Tech wasn't the first job that came up. And I say that very humbly and I say it very gratefully. And that was because of the success our players had and our coaches had. And I had several opportunities early on, and they were Power Five jobs and they paid more money. And so I've often said that to people just to try to provide perspective that there were decisions made no different than any, I think, other businessmen in other areas of business or vocations, that opportunities come up. And when you have success, they come up often. And, you know, I've always said that I would answer any call. That doesn't always mean the answer is yes. And so, to be real frank with you, the answer was no for a long time. We enjoyed Logan, Utah. We enjoyed Utah State. That's also not to say in 2018 that I didn't enjoy it. Are you kidding me? We were rolling. I mean, we were 11-2 and top 25 in the country, and I had a first-round draft pick, eventually quarterback that was still in the room that was coming back for, you know, what I knew to be at least one more year. A tight end and a running back that left and got drafted late and played for a handful of, you know, 2 or 3 years, 4 years, whatever, one of them. In the league that they left after we left, that would have come back, I believe. And so we were poised and ready to have a good team again. So it certainly wasn't that. The culture was good. The recruiting was going good. My family loved it there. It was an opportunity, to be real frank, that, you know, I really truly believe that the Lord led us to Texas Tech. And again, it's hard to get away from the scoreboard and being in a results-driven society and a results-driven business, which I'm very fully aware that I am. And then what eventually 3 years later was the outcome and what happened. And I recognize that now, even looking back. But I would say I truly believe that the Lord led us to Lubbock. And that doesn't mean that it wasn't without tears with my kids. They didn't want to leave. And it had nothing to do with Texas Tech or Lubbock. And it had to do with them loving where they were at. But they bought in, and Tech was good. It really was. And I really believe that what we inherited and what we left were two different things. And the lives that were changed in Lubbock, I will always look back with very, very fond memories and what we did from where we started to where we finished. And there is no question in my mind that it was trending up, and the recruiting was up, and the players and the culture and the program and the way we did things off the field and academics and in the community, as well as the toughness and the grit and the type of kids that we brought into that program that stayed even after I was removed. And I can look back on it now and know that what was given to us and the stewardship, I believe, with our staff of that program was good. And we look back on it now, and while it's It's sad in some ways, and I'm past that from an emotional standpoint, the outcome of what happened. I've grown from it. I've learned from it. I've been confirmed by it. And you look back and you have testimonials from a lot of those players that have gone through there, and the text and the calls from their parents and to me and our staff, it's confirming. That doesn't mean that it wasn't without tears or sadness from coaches and
Sure.
many coaching. When you make that move, it's not just the head coach, it's 35 other people and their families that are affected by it, as well as players that stayed or players that left. And so that's a big decision, and you understand why it happened. I do, and I do now. And it's something that I do look back on, and I know that our time in Texas Tech, I know it was beneficial for many people, and for that, as well as myself, and that I learned from it. And I will always look back at that. And like I said, have fond memories. There's some tough memories too.
Sure.
There's some close losses that still haunt us today. It's hard to think about, hard to not think about. But that's a long answer. You asked me two questions. Hopefully I answered both of them.
Absolutely.
But I have no regrets about that move. I really don't. And again, like I said, I really truly believe the Lord led us there.
Yeah, well, I heard you touched on something whenever you first got to Texas Tech. I think you told the players maybe in the team meeting room when you first interviewed them or talked to them. That they didn't choose you, you chose them. And I think that's a really powerful statement because it's a little different. They didn't get to choose you coming in, but you chose them. And so you're coming into a place that's a very different culture, probably than what you're about to establish. And so what did that look like, maybe stepping into something that was different and having to come in and maybe rework some things to establish the values and the work ethic and the blue collar mentality, the same things you had done at Utah State that maybe wasn't there at the time.
I loved every minute of it, and I look back on it and I remember that team meeting like you just described. I remember like it was yesterday, and I remember some of those faces looking back at us, and it was hard, and we did change that culture, and it just didn't happen fast enough for some people.
Sure.
And but we weren't going to cut corners, and I don't believe we did. And the things that we asked for, those guys bought in, and I am so appreciative of those players and thankful for those players, as well as inspired by many of them, that we did it the right way, and that it does work, and it did work, and it's still working there, and they've got
Absolutely.
another good team coming back. And so I'm very proud of that, and I take a lot of satisfaction in that. And but I smile because I vividly remember that first team meeting, and then how far we came in 3 years from there.
And I want to touch on something you just said too, because you talked about you feel like the Lord led you to Texas Tech. And so you had a lot of opportunities in front of you to go at different places, and you felt like the Lord led you. So you're trusting and following the Lord. I think one of the most powerful things, we're going into maybe family a little bit, is for a kid, a daughter or son, to be able to watch their dad or mom go in and trust in the Lord to follow and do what he feels like he's leading you to do. What was it like? Has faith always been important to you? And what does it mean to be able to step in and trust God and pursue the things that he puts in front of you and to be a great example for your children and for your spouse too? Because I think what you said, I think that's a powerful statement.
Yeah, faith is important to me. And I think, Bailey, more than anything, I think it's, man, when you pray for wisdom, hang on, because not only does, when you feel like you're getting led to do something in life, do you ask for wisdom? But I think it also requires courage, and it requires faith. And oftentimes, without some evidence, and something to see in right in front of you. And so, that's what I think most men, as husbands and as dads, aspire to be. I certainly fall short on the daily, but that's something that I do. I ask and pray for wisdom, but you have to have the courage to step through. And that was one of those moments. I think the other lesson in it is, like I was referencing earlier, is just, winning today, winning the day, and not playing to a scoreboard. And that's something that I used to do early in my career. You know, you play to a scoreboard, and I do. I mean, wins and losses.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, from a human perspective. But, you know, finding joy in the process and finding joy in that day and how to be your best. Maybe not be the best that day, but you can be the best version of you that day. And finding joy in that and finding that best is the standard, and knowing how to define that. And in the midst of a win-loss society, what have you done for me lately society, and a scoreboard society. And that is tough, and it's tough to teach kids that, you know. And so it was an opportunity, especially with the end of what happened at the end of Tech, is conversations with my children, especially my youngest, that, you know, God's going to take care of us. He already knew this outcome before we ever got to Lubbock, and how we're going to continue to trust and to believe that the next step is the next chapter in our life, individually as a Wells family, also in my career, and you know, for my youngest, his high school career coming up next. And so it certainly takes all of that. Easier said than done on this podcast than in real life.
Sure.
You know, and but I think the thing that you continue to strive for every day is to walk by faith and to live by faith. And if you're going to ask for it, to be ready to step through that door and to have courage when the opportunity presents itself.
Mm-hmm. And I think having courage and having the willingness to trust in God and follow when He directs your path is a great example for your kids, a great example for everyone, from the players that you coached, from the people that you're around every single day. Like, that is probably the best example you can put in front of you. But it's not easy to do every day. It's not easy to do. And it's a very, very challenging thing,
certainly,
but having the courage to do it. So I thought that was really a powerful point. Kind of as we wind down, I just want to ask you a few more questions. I got a little fire round for you, so we can say a sentence and you can finish with a word or sentence, however you feel led. You can do anything if.
You can do anything if you have a strong desire and a devotion to be great. You got to be mentally tough. You can't be soft.
Consistency is.
It's being more concerned about your character more than your reputation. You know, your character is who you are. Your reputation is what others think about you. Consistency is how you do anything, is how you do everything. It's what separates you from good from great.
I got the hardest question here for you. Favorite vacation spot?
Oh, heck. Well, we enjoy going to Phoenix. We go to Phoenix a lot, Scottsdale, especially in March for spring training. That's a family favorite.
Yeah.
Probably Cabo is probably my personal favorite, to be honest with you.
Two good options right there.
Okay.
Stewardship means.
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually mentioned that earlier, but stewardship would just mean whatever God gives you, taking really good care of it, and making it better, improving on it. So whether you've been given a company or a team, you've been given a family, you've been blessed with a family, improving, you know, investing and improving and making something better than what you've been given.
Absolutely. I love it. We're done with the fire round. The final two questions I have for you, this podcast, well, first and foremost, is there a certain piece of best advice you've ever received that you didn't already kind of share on the show?
Yeah, probably the first one that comes to mind, and this was my very first year of coaching. I went to a clinic, and a guy was speaking who I did know, veteran head coach that just retired a year ago. And he said, set goals, and I'm paraphrasing the Matt Wells version, set goals that you can reach out and touch that are real. And he kind of left it at that. And I went up after and I said, Coach, what do you mean by set goals that are real? And he said, Wells, here's what I mean. You're a GA at the Naval Academy. Your goal should not be to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, because you got no clue. You got no clue how to be a head coach. You don't even have a clue how to be a coordinator. Why don't you have a position, a goal to be a position coach? Go from a GA to a position coach. And that's what you can reach out and touch. And you be the best GA that you have at the place in the present. And then when you're ready, you'll be promoted and at the right time. And then when you become a position coach, then you work to potentially being a coordinator and those kind of things. And that was, I thought, pretty sound advice for me.
Absolutely. That's great advice. And this last question we always ask, this podcast is called Building Excellence. What does building excellence mean to you? I think you've already kind of alluded to it, but if you wouldn't mind, just kind of share what that means to you.
I think just on the daily, doing your best, having best as your standard, maybe installing a vision if you are in a leadership position, installing a vision and creating a vision and casting a vision for your people, your team, that paints a picture of how you do something, what it looks like. You show them yourself. You're on the ground floor showing them yourself on the daily. Giving them discipline, creating an accountability within a group, giving them encouragement, high fives, rinse, repeat, do it again. Doing it when you're not getting any credit, having that mental toughness to get up and do it every day, even when you don't feel right. And I think consistency, having joy in that process, enjoying the doing every single day, and being very process oriented. And then eventually, I think if you're on the right track, you're going to win. You're going to win on the scoreboard. But that's not going to sustain you. That's not going to sustain any of us because that's fleeting. So having a joy in the process of what you're doing with the people you're doing it and having a faith. And then I think along all of that, I think is the family aspect and not losing aspect because we can all in different businesses, certainly in football and college football, neglect that. And that's certainly, especially I think as I get older, a bigger focal point for me.
Absolutely. Well, I'm gonna have to just put that on repeat every time I wake up in the morning. And we just found out we're having a little girl, so it's our first kid. So the
Congratulations.
family component's really important too. And so anyway, Coach
Congratulations.
Wells, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really
You're
appreciate
welcome.
you sharing your story. If someone wanted to follow you football or yourself or you on social media or anything like that, what's the best way to follow
Yeah,
you?
Twitter. I don't even know my handle. Coach Matt Wells. Maybe there's in there an under, yeah, underscore Coach Matt Wells.
You can
Yeah.
find it on Twitter. Awesome. Well, Coach Wallace, thank
Okay.
you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Bailey.
Hey, everyone, it's Bailey Miles. Thanks again so much for tuning in. We hope you found value in the show. And if you enjoyed it, we would really appreciate you sharing the show with a friend, subscribing on Apple or Spotify podcasts, writing a quick review, or leaving a 5-star rating. When you do that, it really helps get the message out and allows more people to hear these stories and help them build excellence in their life, leadership, and legacy. If you have any questions, thoughts, or ideas, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to me via email. It's bailey@baileymiles.com. Follow us on social. We're on all the different social platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Or check out our website at baileymiles.com. Once again, I'd love to hear from you, so definitely do that. And then thanks again for joining me on this journey. And remember, life begins at the end of your comfort zone.